Hi, and welcome to Entrepreneurs Talk Africa, the podcast for African entrepreneurs. I'm Jason Delory, innovation specialist, serial entrepreneur, and ecosystem builder. And it's my pleasure to be your host for today's episode. As you know, this series, we're focusing on the crucial startup topic of funding, hearing how entrepreneurs from across Africa have tackled the problem head on. And today, it's my pleasure to welcome Sydney Van Nierkerk to share her funding journey with Umazi. Great to have you on the show, Sydney. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Busy, always is.
I can imagine. Well, I suppose in startup world, that's a good thing.
Depends on how you look at it.
Well, to give our audience a bit of an understanding of yourself and your company, I just wanted to give you the floor to let us know more about Umazi and how you came up with the idea and what exactly is the problem that you're solving.
Yeah, so my history and where I come from is sort of why Umazi exists today. I used to implement regulations for a living for the finance industry. And I realized there was a huge inefficiency where it didn't matter which organization I was working for, which financial institution, the client base that we were communicating to as part of that regulatory implementation to get the bank compliant was sort of by and largely the same, which meant that there was a lot of duplication that the client had to do in terms of producing documents and evidence for their financial institutions. And so that made me think that there must be a way that we could sort of centralize, streamline this process and allow the client to easily share it with their financial institutions. And so Umazi was born on the back of me becoming interested in blockchain, and blockchain was still a swear word. I became very knowledgeable on blockchain because I took a course with Oxford University SEED. And with that knowledge, threw myself at startup land, and effectively with that blockchain experience, but also the finance experience, I was working for two blockchain startups before Umazi was officially born. Like the early workings of Umazi was sort of taking place in the background. So kind of like moonlighting kind of process.
Yeah.
And so on paper, Umazi is a lockdown baby, but actually it was an idea that sort of been coming for a while. And in basic terms, in very simplistic terms, what Umazi is it's Umazi is a Web3 distributed ledger enabled enterprise identity platform. So that's a mouthful. Now, what does that mean? it's we're leveraging technology, so Web3, blockchain, distributed ledger tech, to effectively create a verified, validated enterprise identity that is cryptographically secured, which means that it's not fungible, you can't alter it as a single, there's no single point of failure. And so there is a very high level of trustability that the data is true and correct.
Well, I think, thanks for getting the explanation as simple as possible. You know, we know that it is quite a complex industry as well. And like you said, sometimes the buzzwords can be thrown about without like the true understanding behind it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think every entrepreneur can, you know, in some way understand that problem, you know, with the KYC documents required to start, whether it is a company or your bank account or any of those things. It is one of those hurdles that we go through almost bureaucratically that they've got to be a better way to do it. So I think, you know, you guys have hit on something there. But with all the regulations, like you say, and all of the key aspects of knowing the credibility of the documents, and you must have faced a lot of problems while building this or trying to get clients on board with this new technology. What were the challenges that you had when trying to start Umazi?
So I think actually the challenge isn't necessarily the tech. So what we do is we don't really dangle the carrot of the tech. We actually just dangle the value proposition of what we're doing. And the value proposition is we make it simpler, easier, faster to effectively do business with each other. Now, that could be doing business as in, I want to open up a bank account. That could be doing business is I want to provide you with a service. And so you're going to have to do a certain level of due diligence to make sure that I don't necessarily am the weak link in your supply chain process. It's all due diligence at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're focused on, is we're not focused on the tech, because the reality is even though blockchain isn't necessarily a swear word anymore, there's still a lot of skeptics in the industry, right? Yeah. And so the skeptics will look at that and say, well, you're not regulated. No, we don't need to be regulated because we facilitate a process. We don't actually provide verification. So we don't do verification. So if you talk about regulation, the bit that, so I sort of landed in regulations. I didn't pursue regulation as a career prospect. It must be probably one of the driest things you can do for the finance industry is implement regulations. I was often asked, like, do you have a law degree? No, I don't have a law degree, because there's no one who was ever necessarily a true expert on the regulation. But what it did do is it allowed me to think about all the various tricky elements of building a platform like a Mozi. And if I say tricky, I mean everything from data privacy, secrecy, portability, but also how do I deal with a bureaucratic environment like the finance space? How do I stay outside of the regulator's remit? In other words, stay unregulated, but at the same time, add a value that is actually fundamental to so many business processes. How do I bring trust into what we're building in Amazi? Because there's a very high level of trustability when you start looking at a platform like Amazi that is necessary. So how do we get people to trust what we're doing? And so there's a lot of complexity in terms of what we build, because it's not just a simple, straightforward, someone puts their enterprise identity data on the platform and yep, I can trust it, right? So we've had to consider a lot of those things, but it's probably because of my background in that regulatory aspect and implementation programs that I've thought about a lot of strands. So it's like the octopus. It's got many hands, it's got many tentacles, but actually the core product is it's a wrapper of enterprise identity.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's interesting because a lot of time we think of these industries and we automatically assume that the biggest challenge will be the regulatory or that aspect. But interesting with your knowledge that you were able to, you know, put yourself in the space that you didn't necessarily face those head on. However, I do think that you share a very common issue, which was that trust building, which is something that no matter what industry you're in, you have to build that trust with your customers. So I think that's an important thing for our entrepreneurs to pick up on, is that focusing on your value proposition is what enabled you to get that trust, which I think is a good way about it. It's not the tech. You're not putting the tech forward. You're not saying this is the solution to all your problems. You're just basically saying this is the value that we bring through these, whatever it may be. So building that trust is so key. And I think it's testament with your clients that you have built that trust and are able to provide that service and value. But
yeah,
with this series, we all know that one of the big hurdles, in fact, for most startups, particularly ones, you know, either operating in Africa or like with founders from Africa, is that starting to look for funding and getting that funding. You know, it's the El Dorado for startups. And one of the difficulties is just knowing, you know, where to start, how to start, and even when to start. So it'd be really interesting to get a bit more of your experience during the funding and where you started. Did you start at, you know, friends and family or business angels, moving on to venture capitalists and institutional capital, or, you know, and when did you decide that it was time that you needed funding?
So funding, if you're starting out, is always going to be part of your journey, at least for the first, I'm going to guesstimate, just because we're just over 2 years old, but I'm going to guesstimate it's probably going to be part of your journey for the first 5 to potentially 10 years, depending on what kind of startup you are. Yeah. Right, you're always in fundraising mode. So let me explain why I say that. Is you may not be actively fundraising, but at any given point in time, everything that you execute on, that you deliver on, that you accomplish, adds to your narrative for the next funding round. So yes, you've got, may have KPIs or OKRs, regardless of how you track your success rate. At the end of the day, your next round is going to look back of what you've achieved from the previous round. And so you're always in fundraising mode. You're always either looking forward or looking back. The reason why I say is looking back is if your valuation is too high and on your one round, you're going to have a very hard time justifying that valuation at the next round. So when did we know we needed to fundraise? I knew pretty early on that I needed to fundraise. I was under no illusion that it was going to take a long time. There were lots of disappointments along the way. You know, firstly, to put it in perspective, and I don't throw this card out a lot, but I will just to provide the context, is that firstly, I'm a female founder. So if you look at the statistics of female founder fundraising, it's pretty abysmal. And then you take that female founder statistic and say you cut it further, because I'm not just a female founder, I'm a female founder in tech. And then it becomes really abysmal. And then you take that and you cut it even further and say, okay, now we're going to deep tech. We're talking blockchain and distributed ledger tech. There's not many of us. You know, I was at a conference in Silicon Valley 2 weeks ago, and I think I could count on two hands, just two hands, of the oversubscribed conference of how many female founders there were, or females in sort of C-level initiatives within the identity distributed ledger space. So that makes fundraising even harder, because now I need to, as a female, let's call a spade, I have to have additional conviction and credibility because I'm a female. Because the moment I walk into the door or I log on to that Zoom call, I'm already a couple of steps down. So it's harder for females to raise. It's harder depending on where you are in the industry. I would imagine the same applies to females in sort of space engineering, right? It's, yeah. You don't necessarily think about the first astronauts weren't females, they were males.
Unfortunately, it's the sad reality of you know, the funding. If you look at the statistics as well, it clearly shows, like, I mean, last year we're all ranting and raving about how much investment was made in Africa. And if you look at those statistics, well, I think it's something like 3%, or less than 5% was women founders. And this is something that, is going to have to be addressed, but it's something you have to be aware of, you know, in your journey, if you're going to go down that route of funding.
That 3% is abysmal. That's exactly. Terrible, yeah. Right? So in the UK, we've got what they call the Rose Review. The Rose Review was led by Alison Rose, the CEO of NatWest. and looking at the female landscape generally. And so the period that we were in lockdown has seen the highest amount of female founding initiatives being born. But female funding and funding of female startups was down from the year before. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Will we change it? Yes, there's parts of the industry that's changing. So for example, when I started my first fundraising journey last year, I'm seeing, because we're in fundraising mode again now, I'm seeing more female faces on the other side of the screen this year than I did last year. And I think that's where you start changing the narrative, mm-hmm. is if you change the investor scope, you will start changing the investment scope as well, right? So changing the mindset and the approach. The other part of what you asked your question is, when do we know, how did we go about it? So as I mentioned, is I knew pretty early on that I wasn't going to make it unless we've got funding. Mm-hmm. And I needed funding to be able to grow the team, to be able to keep up from a competitive edge perspective. So I think I was on another conversation not too long ago for one of the accelerators locally here in the UK that invited me to talk. And someone asked me, how many pitch decks have you produced? And so I did a quick calculation because I've got, just how many decks are there in one folder?
Yeah.
Over 200.
Yep. Constantly tweaking it.
But also it's the variety. So the deck that you send to an angel, the deck that you send to a VC, the deck that you send to an angel network, they differ, right? And then it's the tweaking. So I'm going to come out of the conversation. I might get some feedback from investors. Some of them are really helpful in terms of feedback. Others are not. And so if you get that feedback, because that's the other thing I also did, is I never took just no. No was like, but why? And I felt better if I was actually getting something out of the investor at the same time. So yes, you may have spent 45 minutes or 2 hours with me to try and get comfortable with the idea and get to your decisions, but I need something from you in return. And so if you can explain to me just a little bit more about your thinking, it helps me and Umazi at the same time to effectively alter our narrative to make sure that we've got the right narrative. And sometimes that meant tweaking the slides. And so over 200 decks of pitch decks is reasonable.
Oh yeah, if you look at it like that, for sure. But I just wanted to pick up on a few points that you mentioned there, which I think are really key. Firstly, when you were discussing about that narrative, always in funding mode and having to build that narrative, it just shows that you need that trust, and that trust doesn't just come from when you approach them, with that one snippet of time. You have to have this tracking, have this workings, have all these pieces of information there ready if the investor or whoever it is, an angel, is wanting that information. You have to be there and you have to be ready with it. You also mentioned knowing your investors, which I think is key, with the tweaking of the different pitch decks. But I think, and I've said it before, I think we spend a lot of time as entrepreneurs looking at our customers, and we sometimes forget to do this with our investors, where you need to know who you're selling to, basically, because you are, at the end of the day, selling your company, and you need to know what their values are so that you can align with them. So I think that's another key piece of info for some of the entrepreneurs looking out there. And lastly, touching on that subject of being a female founder, sometimes the challenges that you face won't necessarily be in a book that tells you how to fundraise for startups. You will have to deal with the environment around you, and also, unfortunately, some of the barriers that have been built up in these industries over time that we are obviously looking to break. But at the same time, you need to be aware of that, because, like you say, it affected how your journey went with the funding and affected how you had to prepare for it. So it's something to keep in mind with other founders out there. is knowing the battle that you're going to need to face. But with all that, you need to still, as with your company, stay agile with your funding pitch and your where you're looking for funding. So I think all of that combined helps to make it a journey rather than a destination. It's not a one-time thing. It's something that you're constantly doing, constantly taking throughout your thinking, which is interesting, because one thing I was wanting to ask you is, with that, what points, like, most people will just be like, oh, I prepared a pitch deck and that's me looking for investment. So how did you prepare? It obviously seems that you've been doing it for, you've been thinking about it for longer. So how do you imbue that into your company and think about the funding process before you go and ask for money?
So I will be honest with you. I leverage the people around me a lot. So there's always someone that knows you, that knows the industry better than what you do. The one thing that I've also become better at, because in the beginning that was the challenge, is trying to take everybody's feedback and putting into and trying to make it my own. That was a mistake, because it wasn't, it was coming across as it didn't sound like me. And so the thing that I got to as well is I need to be convinced about what I'm saying. Otherwise, I don't sound convinced when I'm saying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other things I did is, when I say is, I listen to my network and those around me, is I'm in the fortunate position that my partner is a mergers and acquisitions banker. He buys and sells companies for a living. So he was probably one of my biggest critiquers at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Of what that narrative says. And he would challenge me. And yes, it was frustrating, because I was trying to say something and I felt like he wasn't understanding what he was saying, but he was challenging me in a way, because he knew it was gonna be a hard one to sell on certain topics. So he was very good in terms of getting that narrative to a good place. Then the second one is accelerators. So we've gone through a few accelerators. Mm-hmm. Some costed us, some didn't. So some free, some not. And if I say free, I mean, we didn't have to give up equity to go through them. Mm-hmm. And so that provided a lot of input as well in terms of the funding narrative, mm-hmm. but also from a exposure perspective and just getting familiar with the startup industry. Like, startup land isn't for everyone. You need to have, we always used to joke, we don't do it anymore, but we used to joke around the dinner table that you have to be slightly delirious to be a founder of a startup. What I mean by that is you're so delirious that you think that you've got this amazing idea and it's gonna work. It's you just need that funding to prove to anybody that's mm-hmm. gonna work.
Yeah.
That's kind of a bit delirious.
Yep. That's almost the definition, huh? But you know, I think we're a special breed. But you know, one thing that's interesting that you mentioned is the leveraging the people around you. And sometimes we get almost isolated in our thinking and we don't look to the people closest to us and try and have a space to be challenged. I think that's really important as well, because a lot of the times we focus on the good that we hear. We want everybody to be, you know, like, oh, that's a great idea. And we don't necessarily give them the space to challenge it. I always think a good point is to ask for that challenge, if you know, and give the people the space to do that. Obviously, you know, we're being in mergers and acquisitions, that was definitely a good person to challenge. But there's people around us every day that have insights that we can use and that will help us when we get that question from an investor or when we're pitching. So I think that's key. The other one, the accelerators, and I think that is something that is building here in Africa, in the terms that we have now lots more programs and a lot more, you know, systems there to help us along that journey. But you know, sometimes it's seen as not wanting to share their idea or things like that. But it does help being in an accelerator or an incubator to help with that funding journey, and also increasing that network of individuals who can help you so that you can leverage more and more people to take you into that journey. And definitely. So unfortunately, time goes so quickly. We're coming to the end of the show. But before we leave you, I just wanted to ask one of our signature questions for this series is basically if you were going to do it again, or if you had some advice for another founder out there looking to raise capital, what would be your key takeaways, your key pieces of advice for them to keep in mind?
It's don't forget the hustle. So it's kind of, it comes back to not necessarily taking no as the end of the road and that's where the journey ends. It's sort of what can you get out of it? So is it a follow-up meeting with some further feedback, or is it tell me what is it that would make you invest in Omazi? What do I need to achieve? Because some of that market color is helpful. You don't have to listen to it. You don't have to take it on board, but it's just helpful. It's helpful from a growth perspective, but it's also in some respects, it's helpful from a focus perspective. It's also helpful to you, the delirious person, to know that you're not completely mad, because they'll tell you, for example, we love this, we don't like this, and we're comfortable with X. Mm-hmm. So it sort of keeps your sanity in check as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, thank you so much. I think that's so true. And we can get more out of every situation, interaction, by just asking and by just taking that in and building on that. Like you say, not always will it be the best piece of advice, but it still helps to add to the overall understanding of your company, your pitch, yourself. So definitely some key words there, and definitely something I encourage a lot of entrepreneurs to think about. I just wanted to thank you so much again, Sydney, for being on the show. It has been a pleasure. Any final words before we leave?
I would just say, anybody that's thinking about going down the entrepreneurial route, mm-hmm. it's a lonely place. And if you're okay with that, and you still think it's a good idea, then... Great. Good luck to you.
Yeah. Good luck to all of you out there. And thank you very much to Sydney again. And to all of you listening, you've been listening to Entrepreneurs Talk Africa.